So this morning we continue and conclude the story of Jacob and Esau. Yesterday, the key points, as I recall them, are that Rebekah, the mother, got her son, Jacob, to trick the blind, almost blind, dad, Isaac, into giving his blessing to her favourite child, the second born, against all the customs of the day. As a result of which, Esau was hated, is the word they use, his brother Jacob, and he's just waiting for the dad to die, and then he's going to kill Jacob. So Rebekah again comes to the scene, and she sends her son off, or arranges to go to the dad and get the okay, to send him to his uncle, Rebekah's brother, Laban, up in Syria, where he can be safe from his elder twin. And just before he goes, the father again, Isaac, renews the blessing and gives him a blessing on his journey. It's the last time they'll manage that. And before I go on, yesterday in response, I just checked it out now, in response to a question I was asked, a very good question yesterday, I gave the wrong answer. I got myself tongue-tied. I think I gave you the impression that the blessing at the end there was for Esau. It wasn't. It was for Jacob, who's going off now to his uncle Laban. Now let's read the story, and there's a fair bit of deception still to come. But there's a lovely ending. Jacob works for his uncle for 7 years because he's love struck, is that the right word, by Rachel. And the father says, all right, if you work for me for 7 years, I'll give her to you as your wife. So Jacob, who's used to tricking other people, works for 7 years, and then it's a lovely evening, it's twilight and it's dark, and he goes to bed with Rachel, inverted commas, wakes up in the morning to find it's Leah, not Rachel. The dad said, by way of a kind of excuse for what he did, he says, it's not done in our country. You don't give the younger one before the older one. So I'm just sticking to our customs. Now that's okay. So he says, if you work for another 7 years, you can have Rachel. So he works for another 7 years. He's been there 14 years. And it says, when he finally gets her as his wife, Jacob loved Rachel more than Leah. And when Yahweh saw that Leah was unloved, this is typical of the Yahweh of the Old Testament. He looks after the poor and the lonely and the disappointed. We can put ourselves in those categories if inappropriately. So it says, Yahweh saw that Leah was unloved, so he opened her womb, enabled her to have children. But Rachel, you could end this yourself, was barren. That seems to be the way it goes. The favoured one, the one through whom the promise is going to come, is barren, meaning nature can't help. It has to be divine intervention. Now we start getting the list of the 12 tribes of Israel, named after the 12 sons of Jacob. None of this is biographical. It's a good story to link them all together. When the different states joined together as Israel, they had to get a story whereby Abraham from down there, and the stories about him, and Jacob from the north, the stories about him, and Isaac is somewhere in the middle, they have them all related, and they have these sons. So it's one way of reinforcing their community. So the text reads, when the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Leah conceived and bore a son, and she named him Reuben. And then there's just a play on the word it's not the etymology, but it's the folklore etymology. She called him Reuben because she says, because the Lord has looked on my affliction, surely now my husband will love me. That's Jacob's firstborn. Surely, says Leah, my husband will love me. She conceived again and bore a son and said, because Yahweh has heard that I'm hated, he's given me this son also. So she named him Simeon. Again, she conceived and bore a son and said, now this time my husband will be joined to me, because I've borne him three sons, so I'll name him Levi. She conceived again and bore a son and said, this time I'll praise Yahweh. Judah means praise Yahweh, praise. Therefore she named him Judah. When then she ceased bearing children. So she's given Jacob four sons. Jacob becomes rich with the herds and the cattle and all that kind of thing, sheep and so on. In a story that parallels that of Sarah, Rachel gives her maid to Jacob. She can't bear children, but her maid can. So in order to attach herself more closely to Jacob, she gives him her maid, which had happened with Hagar in an earlier generation. And her maid bore her two sons, Dan and Naphtali. These are from the north part of Israel. When Leah can no longer conceive, she gives Jacob, she's not going to be outdone by Rachel, she gives Jacob her maid who bears him two sons, Gad and Asher. Four, five, six, seven, so up to eight sons so far. Reuben decides, he goes out and fetches mandrakes. They had an idea that if you have mandrake, you can become fertile. I don't know whether you can or not, but there it is. Reuben fetches mandrakes to help his mother Leah conceive again. Rachel asks for the mandrakes. Rachel asks for them. And in exchange, she lets Leah sleep with Jacob again. This is not terribly sending you all into prayer, but it will soon, I promise you. Leah bears Jacob two more sons. So she had four already, now he's two more, Issachar and Zebulun. And the text reads, now my husband will honour me because I've borne him six sons. Afterwards, she bore a daughter and named her Dinah. Then God remembered Rachel. It's always the turning point in these stories. God intervenes. And God heeded her and opened her womb. She conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. And she named him Joseph, saying, may Yahweh add to me another son. Joseph means add. Then the story goes on. Laban tried to cheat Jacob, memories of Jacob and Esau, by entering into an agreement about the goats and sheep of a certain colour. But, ever the trickster, Jacob deceives Laban and enters up with a huge flock. He's a smart, well, he's been outdone a bit, but he's still pretty smart. Now, Jacob heard that the sons of Laban were saying, Jacob has taken all that was our father's. He's gained all this wealth from what belonged to our father. And Jacob saw that Laban did not regard him with favour as he did before. Then Yahweh said to Jacob, return to the land of your ancestors and to your kindred And here it is again, I will be with you. Jacob explains to his wives that it was God who showed him how to counter Laban's plot and has told him to leave and return to the land of my birth. And his two wives agree. So Jacob arose and set his children and his wives on camels, and he drove away all his livestock, all the property that he gained, the livestock in his possession that he had acquired in Padan Aram, district of Syria, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. Rachel, however, they're a family unlike any of yours. Rachel steals Laban's house, little figurines that they worshipped and had, you know, everywhere to worship them in their gods. Jacob departs, unaware that his favoured wife Rachel has stolen these gods. Laban catches up with Jacob, because Jacob went by night and he hears it, and Laban's after him. He catches up, but he's instructed by God not to harm him. And then he goes in, and Jacob says, look, you can search everywhere. We haven't got them. And then she kind of puts them under her mattress and has the different things, and they go in and search and don't find them, thank heavens. Rachel tricks him so that he fails to discover the stolen gods. Then Laban and Jacob make a covenant, setting up border posts between Aram, that's Syria, and the land that would become Israel. So these are stories about the origins, of course. So after 20 years away, Jacob returns. And now we come to the extraordinary story. He sends messengers ahead to his brother Esau, because 20 years ago Esau was going to hated him and was going to kill him as soon as he got the chance. So obviously Jacob's quite frightened of this. So he sends messages ahead, and the text reads, thus you shall say to my lord Esau, my lord, the blessing that Isaac gave to Jacob that he should have given to Esau was to be lord of his brothers. You remember that. Here is the younger of the twins, Jacob. He's learned a few lessons in the meantime. He calls Esau my lord. That'll come stronger in a moment. Thus says your servant Jacob, I've lived with Laban as an alien, and I've stayed until now. And I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, male and female slaves, and I've sent to tell my lord in order that I might find favour in your sight. The text goes on. The messengers returned to Jacob saying, we came to your brother Esau and he's coming to meet you. That sounds good, but the next bit doesn't. With 400 men with him. Jacob hears that Esau is coming to meet him with 400 men, and we're told Jacob became exceedingly afraid and distressed. Then Jacob was afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that were with him and the flocks and the herds and the camels into two companies, thinking if Esau comes to the one company and destroys it, the company that is left will escape. So he's plotting an escape route. Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, O Yahweh, who said to me, return to your country and to your kindred, and I will do you good. I'm not worthy of the least of all the steadfast love and all the faithfulness that you've shown to your servant. For with only my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two companies. Deliver me, he prays, please, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I am afraid of him. He may come and kill us all, the mothers with the children. Yet, Yahweh, you have said, I will surely do you good and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted because of their numbers. So here we have a humble prayer to God from Jacob. Gustave Doré, the illustrator, that's his drawing of this prayer. So he spent the night there, and from what he had with him, he took a present for his brother Esau: 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milk camels and their colts, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. These he delivered into the hand of his servant. They all drove by itself, and said to his servants, pass on ahead of me and put a space between the drove and the drove, one group and another group. He instructed the foremost, when Esau my brother meets you and asks you, who do these belong to? Where are you going? And whose are these ahead of you? You shall say, they belong to your servant Jacob. They are a present sent to my lord Esau. And moreover, they'd say, Jacob is coming behind us. He likewise instructed the second and the third and all who followed the droves. You shall say the same thing to Esau when you meet him. And you shall say, moreover, your servant Jacob is behind us. He's preparing the way clearly. For he thought, I may appease him with the present that goes ahead of me, and afterwards I shall see his face. Perhaps he will accept me. So the present passed on ahead of him, and he himself spent that night in the camp. The same night he got up and took his two wives, his two maids, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. It's just under the Lake of Galilee, coming from the east. Big gully there, etc. This is the Jabbok River. He took them and sent them across the stream, and likewise everything he had. So here's Jacob alone on the wrong side, the east side of the Jordan River, and the Jabbok he has to cross to get into the promised land. And he's alone. And then this famous scene, which I'm sure you'd have read somewhere, at the ford of Jabbok, Jacob was left alone. And a man, and these always get confused, man, angel, God, some vision, wrestled with him until daybreak. And in their imagination, the spirits come out at night, and once the sun is up, they lose all power. So they've got to stop doing what they do and get back into the dark before the sun sheds light. So when the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he struck him on the hip socket, some scholars say, which is highly likely, that's a euphemism for the genitals. And Jacob's hip, we'll call it, was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the day is breaking," says this spirit of the river. "Let me get go, for the day is breaking." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." So he said to them, "What's your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then the man, inverted commas, said, "You shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel." This is their story about the origins of the name Israel, given to Jacob, the father of the, at the moment, 11 tribes, one to come. "For you have striven with God," and Israel, El is God, Israel means those who struggle with God. And it's actually a very pertinent name, welcomed by people of the Jewish religion, that they've always got this struggle with God. They won't let it go, but they know they can't hold God or define God, but they're struggling with it. I guess, please God, as we are, because we know God is well beyond anything we can theologize about. "You have struggled with God and you have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name. Who am I fighting with in this wrestle?" But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "I have seen God," inverted commas, "face to face, and yet my life is preserved." So he somehow realizes whatever's been going on in the dark, lonely night at this river to cross over, he has to get into the promised land. He knows that somehow he struggled with God and prevailed. So Jacob emerges from the struggle with a new name and a new blessing. And we're now to see how that unfolds. "Now Jacob looked up and saw Esau coming, and 400 men with him. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two maids. He put the maids with their children in front, then Leah with her children, and then Rachel and Joseph last of all. He himself went on ahead of them, bowing himself to the ground 7 times, and he came near his brother." But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. An extraordinary reconciliation after all these years. When Esau looked up and saw the women and children, he said, "Who are these with you?" And Jacob said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant," meaning himself, of course. Then the maids drew near, they and their children, and bowed down. Leah likewise and her children drew near and bowed down. And finally Joseph and Rachel drew near and they bowed down. So the blessing that was stolen by Jacob from his brother, here he is, treating his brother as the blessed one, the one who has power over his brothers. Esau said, "What do you mean by all this company that I meet?" And Jacob answered, "It's to find favor and don't miss it, with my Lord. My Lord. But Esau said, I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself. And Jacob said, no, please, if I find favor with you, accept my present from my hand, for truly to see your face is like seeing the face of God. Since you have received me with such favor, please accept, here's the key sentence, please accept the blessing that is brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me and because I have everything I want. He didn't need to listen to his mother. He didn't need to steal a blessing from his brother. And here he is giving the blessing back that he'd stolen 20-something years before. He urged his brother, and his brother took it. Then Esau said, let us journey on our way, and I will go alongside you. But Jacob said to him, my Lord knows that the children are frail and that the flocks and herds which are nursing are a care to me. And if they are overdriven for one day, all the flocks will die. Let my Lord pass on ahead of his servant, that's him, and I will lead on slowly. According to the pace of the cattle that are behind me, and according to the pace of the children, until I come to my Lord in Seir, another name for Edom, to the south of Judah. So Esau said, let me leave with you some of the people who are with me. But he said, why should my Lord be so kind to me? So Esau returned that day on his way home to Seir. Twenty years earlier, as we've said already, and the brother Esau was determined to kill Jacob. Rebekah had been told that the elder, the younger, will serve. In the blessing given by Isaac to Jacob, Jacob was told, rule over your brothers, and may your mother's son bow down to you. And everything's been reversed. The trickster is giving it all back. He's bowing to his elder brother. 5 times Jacob, we've seen, addresses Esau as my Lord. 2x he speaks of himself as Esau's servant. At the Jabbok River, Jacob found his true identity, and hence a new name, Israel, struggling with God. He has the covenant blessing, children and land. Here, he's giving back the blessing he stole so many years before. The only blessing Jacob needs is his own, the one God wants for him. So he'll accept whatever blessing God gives, but he won't try and trick his way into obtaining it by deceit. Now Jacob arrives at Shechem. Jacob journeyed to Sukkot and built himself a home and made booths for his cattle. Therefore the place is called Sukkot. It's the name of one of the feasts that they have, the Jewish feasts, where at the end of the agricultural season, the only time they can get away, they would all come to Jerusalem there's not enough room for them, so they used to have tents all around on the hills around Jerusalem. So it became a city of tents, Sukkot, hence the name, for the New Year festival. But this is kind of putting it back into the past. Jacob journeyed to Sukkot and built himself a house and made booths for his cattle. Therefore the place is called Sukkot. That's their name for their understanding of how it got its name. Jacob came safely to the land of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, on his way from Paddan Aram, Syria. And he camped before the city, and from the sons of Hamor, Shechem's father, he bought for 100 pieces of money the plot of land on which he'd pitched his tent. This is the second purchase. There he erected an altar and called it El Elohe Israel, the great God of Israel. Conclusion. The surface narrative follows the logic of the saga. Isaiah dies, one son, Jacob, outwits the other, Esau, and wins. The counter narrative, which is easy enough to miss underneath it, subverts the expected story with its rivalry, its displacement, its anger, its violence, and its revenge. Jacob wrestles with God, with the other, and with himself. He comes to realize that his true blessing is given by God. He has no need of disguise or deception. And if one of you were giving a homily, you'd probably add now, we don't need it either. God loves you and me as we are. Now, it doesn't mean he loves everything we do, but he knows that only love will help me do better. We've got to respond to something, and only love will work. So, just as with Jacob, he came to realize that all he needed was God's love, God to be with him. That's the blessing. And we have to come to that too, of course. We don't have to be other than we are to be loved. But being loved, we become other than we are. We become more beautiful. Israel is called not to wealth and power, but to covenant. That's what the post-exilic authors wanted to tell us. You are passing by the borders. This is the book of Deuteronomy now. You are passing by the borders of your brothers, the descendants of Esau, who live in Seir. We've met those two words. This is Edom. Although they fear you, be very careful not to provoke them. This is on their journey through the wilderness, and they're going to have to bypass Edom and go up to Moab and then across the Jordan that way. I will not give you even so much as a foot's length of their land, since I've given Mount Seir as Esau's inheritance. The choice of Jacob, again, doesn't mean the rejection of Esau. God chooses, but never rejects. Each is precious in God's eyes. Jonathan Sacks was the Jewish head rabbi in England till not too long ago, and he's written a book, Not in God's Name, and it includes this statement here. The people of the covenant must wrestle, as did Jacob, in the depths of the soul to discover the face, the name, and the blessing that is there. Before Jacob could be at peace with Esau and with himself, he had to overcome mimetic desire, wanting to be whatever, have what others have, abandon sibling rivalry and learn that he was not Esau, he was Israel, one who wrestles with God and never lets go. It's quite beautiful, isn't it? Now there's trouble at Shechem. There's always trouble in this book. Shechem, the son of Hamor the Hivite, has intercourse with Jacob's daughter, Dinah, whom we heard mentioned. He loves her and he wants to marry her. Dinah's brothers agree on the proviso, that's the 11 of them, 11 sons of Jacob, her brothers, on the proviso that all the males agree to be circumcised, fit in with our customs. That's what they want. Another dreadful story. Simeon and Levi attack and slaughter all the males who are kind of, I imagine, circumcision when you're a month old, as I had and a lot of men had in my day. It was a bit different from having it when you're 50. I don't know about that, but I imagine it would be. So they're kind of recuperating. And Simeon and Levi take the advantage of this and slaughter all the males. They plunder the city and take all the animals. And Jacob is unhappy, of course, because he's learnt something. And the text says, "You've brought trouble on me by making me odious to the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites and the Perizzites. My numbers are few, and if they gather themselves against me and attack me, I shall be destroyed, both I and my household." And Jacob goes back to Bethel, where he set up where the ladder, do you remember, joining heaven to earth, what we had that dream, this awesome place, this presence of God. And the text goes on, "God appeared to Jacob again when he came from Padan Aram, and he blessed him, and God said to him, 'Your name is Jacob, no longer shall you be called Jacob, you will be called Israel, that will be your name.'" Another account of the change of name. "So he was called Israel, and God said to him, 'I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall come from you, and kings shall spring from you. The land that I gave to Abram and Isaac, I will give to you. And I will give the land to your offspring after you.' Then God went up from him at the place where he had spoken with him." Then they journeyed from Bethel, and when they were still some distance from Ephrath, that's Bethlehem, Rachel was in childbirth, and she had a hard labor. When she was in her hard labor, the midwife said to her, "Don't be afraid, for now you'll have another son." As her son was departing, as her soul was departing, brackets, for she died, she named him Ben-Oni, the son of my pain. But his father called him Ben-Yamin. If you stand in Israel and look east, which is the way you're meant to look, for us it's there, but anyhow, look east, because that's where the sun comes, and that's where everything comes from, the east. So if you look east, then your right hand, Yamin, is south. Has to be. And Benjamin, the tribe of Benjamin, was the southernmost tribe of Israel, just a tiny little area bordering just north of Jerusalem, bordering on Judah. And that's where the first king is going to come from, because it was a compromise between the Joseph tribes, which is Samaria, and Judah. and they put in charge the first king, someone they could both control, a little tiny little stretch of land. So Rachel died, and she was buried on the way to Ephrath. They explain that is Bethlehem. And Jacob, when they want to put that in there, because that's where David came from, and Jacob set up a pillar at her grave. It is the pillar of Rachel's tomb, which is there to this day. I don't know if it's there to this day, but it was to the day when they wrote this. It's still there to be seen. Reuben revolts against Jacob by having intercourse with one of Jacob's concubines, which is a way of challenging for leadership. But it fails. And now we come and conclude with the death of Isaac and the end of our story before we start tomorrow on the Joseph story. Jacob came to his father Isaac at Mamre, or Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, where Abram and Isaac had resided as aliens. Now the days of Isaac were 180 years, and Isaac breathed his last. He died and was gathered to his people, old and full of days, and his sons Esau and Jacob, there they are together, buried him. So there's a total reconciliation way back then. Obviously something's happened in the meantime to cause the rivalry, but they're trying to tell the readers of this, it wasn't ever thus, and it needn't be thus, and we've got to learn to live with each other. Then it gives the list